This is exactly right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Boys will be boys. I think we hear a little bit less of that, still some of that, but more fear and worry at this point. I think that's the trajectory we're on right now. And where I come in is like, I want to say like, hey, we don't, you know, it's good that you're aware and that you have concern about this. And there's tons we can do, right? We don't need to be sort of helpless and hopeless and let things play out. We can actually intervene in positive ways so that the chances of things turning out good are quite high.
Welcome to Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan. I'm Dr. Dan. This show is about making the world a more loving, accepting, and compassionate place, one parent, one person, and one child at a time. The key to raising healthy and engaged kids is for parents to seek the same in their own lives while striving to be the best versions of themselves each day. No matter who you are or where you came from, with increased awareness, you can be purposeful about leaving a healthy footprint for your children, your family, and all those you care about, while living your life to the fullest. Today's show is Parenting Boys Peacefully with Tasha Shore. Tasha is a mom to three boys and an advocate for boys and their families. She's on a mission to create a more peaceful world, one sweet boy at a time, by supporting you to care for yourself, connect with your boy deeply, set limits lovingly, and play wildly. Tasha is the creator of all things Parenting Boys Peacefully, including Parenting Boys Peacefully, a 10-day reconnect, an online group experience shared by over 15,000 parents worldwide. She's also a trainer of hand-in-hand parenting and co-author of Listen, 5 Simple Tools to Meet Your Everyday Challenges. Tasha is also a frequent guest expert on podcasts like ours and online and in-person conferences. Tasha, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Dan. I'm excited to be back.
December of 2018 seems like another lifetime, pre-pandemic, whatever that thing was. We didn't even see that coming. We were talking about parenting to help young boys thrive. And you're still doing that and raising it to peaceful levels.
I am. I'm committed.
You are committed. Okay, so let's talk about the part of your bio that I did not read about is your past studies, right? So here you are, a feminist women's studies major, and transition at some point in your life to staunchly advocating for this group of little individuals, these boys in our world. How's that happen?
Yeah, I know. It's a bit odd. So the backstory is that I grew up, in the San Francisco Bay Area in the 70s and 80s with my mom, and we were very involved in the women's rights movement and spent a lot of time at protests and fighting for women's rights and girls' rights. And that's how I grew up. And that was sort of how I grew into my power as a woman. And it was amazing in so many, many ways. And Then I grew up and I ended up having, let me back up a little bit. I got pregnant.
Yes.
And there was a day when I was pregnant when all of a sudden I had this thought that was, oh my goodness, what if I have a boy? Mm-hmm. Which is like a weird thought because like, who cares really? But I'm just being honest because that's who I am. That was my thought. So what did I do? Well, I called my mom because that's always what I did. So I called my mom and I said, Mom, what if I have a boy? And just dead silence on the other end. I felt like it was years. It was probably just a few seconds. But then she said, don't worry, Tasha. We'll figure it out. But it just was a moment that made me think about how female focused my world had been. I just assumed I would have girls. It didn't even occur to me that anything else could be possible. And the problem was with all the beauty of the movement and the power that I gained from it and the freedoms that women won and are still winning, which are amazing, is that the way that I interpreted that was that there was good and evil. And maybe that was my black and white, you know, undeveloped child's brain. But it was like, okay, like if I have power and I'm the good guy, then he's the bad guy. Right. So, so men or boys were kind of the bad guys in my mind. And then I went and had one and then two and then three. And I'm like, well, now what am I supposed to do? Because I love these beings more than anything in the world. I mean, like my love is inexplicable. I can't even explain or express how much I love these little guys. But they're the bad guys. They're not the bad guys. And then they started doing like, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on here.
You are.
Okay. They just started doing dumb shit, right? Yes. And so they would do things and then I'd feel embarrassed and I'm like, oh my God, this is exactly it. You know, I can't feminist person have boys behaving in this way. So there were just all of these things that I had to figure out, and which essentially boiled down to how do I advocate for these boys whom I love deeply, despite their behavior sometimes. And that's not to excuse their behavior at all, but it just means I'm always on their side. Like I'm always fighting for them to be better.
Yeah, that is a great story because more and more I'm just being involved in conversations about the evolution of the feminist movement and how, and everything's a continuum, right? There's always growth and it makes perfect sense with, female power and girl power and men in the patriarchy bad. Yes. I mean, true.
Absolutely.
And then this awareness, awakening, then writing with all these amazing, feminist thinkers and advocates about, wait, we can't change the patriarchy if we completely ignore the boys that grow up to be the men that perpetuate the patriarchy. And wait, the men are their own type of victims to the patriarchy, to the system as well. And it starts with these, it's very complicated, but it starts with these little boys.
Yeah.
And the impact of women who are usually the most influential people in little boys' lives.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, truthfully, like this aha moment came to me one morning when I was sitting and reading the paper. I had dropped my kids off at school and I was taking a moment before starting work and I was reading and it was just full of horrible things, right? I mean, rape, murder, terrorist attacks. I mean, just one thing after another. And it was all men, right? The perpetrators were all men. And in that moment, I had this thought like, all of these men at some point were just sweet little boys. Like they were just born these sweet little boys. And I'm not naive. I know there's all sorts of, you know, geopolitical issues, mental health issues, you know, all the isms and oppressions and lots of things that, you know, influence people to behave in certain ways. But I just felt like, wow, we have an amazing opportunity as parents of these young boys to move them in a different direction, to change the trajectory. And truth be told, a huge percentage of parents who come to me for help are scared that their kid's going to end up in jail. Our kid are scared that their little guy is going to treat their partner horribly, be abusive mm-hmm. in some way. Like, and this could be like a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old who, you know, is angry and is acting out in all sorts of ways, but the future fear is huge and it's mm-hmm. real.
Mm-hmm.
So we're, yes. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. I was to say, first of all, that awareness, even though it's fear and we don't want to live in worry and fear, we know that that takes away from our present. However, I would say that's even advancement, that parents are coming in, particularly mothers, I'm imagining, are coming in with that fear of this future. Like they see what's going on and they're trying to do something now about something they're afraid about in the future. And how many years ago would that not even be the fear? Right.
I mean, it would have just been, well, boys will be boys.
Yes, boys will be boys.
Right. I think we hear a little bit less of that, still some of that, mm-hmm. But more fear and worry at this point. I think that's the mm-hmm. trajectory we're on right now. And where I come in is like, I want to say like, hey, we don't, you know, it's good that you're aware and that you have concern about this. And there's tons mm-hmm. we can do, right? We don't mm-hmm. need to be sort of helpless and hopeless
mm-hmm.
And let things play out. We can actually intervene in positive ways so that the chances of things turning out good are quite
yes.
high.
Yeah. Yeah. As you were raising your boys, and of course you are very aware of all of this, I'm just curious as to how you started to see our societal and cultural expectations and systems impacting your boys while you're trying to raise them in a particular way, given your background. And it's like, is there a new enemy all of a sudden?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. Look, you know, to be honest, the training, the growing up in the 70s and the 80s and the fighting for the underdog, like was a good training. It gave me grit. I've got tough skin. I am not afraid to speak my mind. These are all things that have turned out to be a huge help in me advocating for my boys as they grew up. I would say that the hardest system has been the school system, the education system, and the means of discipline. Mm-hmm. So most schools, and I work with parents all over the world, I hear this all the time, most schools are still very old school, if you will, about mm-hmm. their discipline policies. It's like you break a rule, you get the traditional, you know, time, you're punished, you get time off mm-hmm. recess, you are isolated, you are shamed for it, your parents get called. There is nothing done that's going to give this child the opportunity to do better next time. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is they get stuck in this pattern of they do something that's against the rules. It's not the right thing to do. And again, like it probably isn't the right thing to do. Okay. I'm with you there, but where we split is then what we do afterwards. And so they come in mm-hmm. and come down hard and punish. And this little guy feels bad about himself because of course you're going to feel bad about yourself. Mm-hmm. And then the behavior gets worse because they feel more self-conscious and bad, but their self-esteem has taken a dip. Mm-hmm. And we just get into this downward cycle and we get, you know, he's the bully and he's the bad kid and he's the, you know, class clown, and we get labeled. And mm-hmm. then it's really, really hard to get rid of a label. So
yeah.
I have pulled my children out of schools, out of a school, I should say, because of, yes, something stupid that one of my kids did,
mm-hmm.
but it just got to a point where I was like, my values are different than yours. My values go, okay, your values go, he did this thing and he needs to sit out of PE for the rest of the year on the bench. To me, that's one, not giving him any reparation tools. It's not and it's also shaming. I mean, everyone's playing and he's sitting there being shamed on the side by himself. That wasn't going to cut it. My values were like, yeah, he did something stupid, not okay. Number one, we need to look at relationship repair with this other kid. Relationship always first. Two, no shaming, because mm-hmm. nobody can improve their behaviors from a place of feeling shamed. I certainly can't.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we need to come from a place of love and understanding. And three, it's like, these are little boys. right? These are little boys. They are going to screw up. They're going to do dumb things. We all do dumb things. Where are they ever going to have the opportunity to make the mistakes and learn from them if not in elementary school, if not in middle school, right? Where are they going to happen? Where is that going to happen?
Right.
We can't expect them to be perfect all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But we can seize every opportunity when they make a mistake to turn it into a teachable moment to teach about relationship repair, about apology, all of those things. And it was just a huge missed opportunity. And I was just like, okay, our values don't match. Bye.
I'm glad you said shame. That's the word that was going through my head. And shame is so powerful. I mean, there's talk in the literature about shame having more detrimental effects on development, on esteem, on behavior than even physical abuse, right? I mean, and we're not talking about like which abuse is better here. It's all not good. I'm just saying that to make the point about shame is so invisible. You know, it comes generally with words, although people feel shame when they're also violated and mistreated physically, sexually as well, emotionally. The power of adults, whether it is teachers, whether it is parents, whether it's grandparents, whether it's coaches, the power of the word. I don't think like this is something we should learn in school, right? The power of the word and the impact that shaming people have that can change their trajectory.
So one of the things that parents are really surprised about when they work with me is this idea that I'm not a big talker and I don't advocate for them to be a big talker. Because I think we think about shame as being really specific shaming words, but sometimes just bringing attention back to something that a child did can feel shaming. So like, for example, If your little guy, you know, hits his brother, for example, and you come back and you say, you know better than to do that. Now, you're not sort of saying, you know, you should feel ashamed of yourself or something like that. But you're coming back and you're bringing his attention to the fact that he did something that in his mind he knows he shouldn't be doing. But what you're not realizing is that the premise that I work with and that I think brain science shows is that he's doing his best always. And so if we're bringing attention back to the fact that he didn't do something, but he couldn't do it, then that's a really hard place to be. Because it's like, I wanted to do better, but I couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I mean?
I do. And then, so now we're going, so yeah, now we're taking a step back, big overview here of how do we see these kids, right? I want to go back even further to parenting boys peacefully, because that's, I'm guessing you chose that very purposely. And what this concept means to you when you are going about the work.
You're asking me what it means to me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So parenting boys peacefully to me is a feminist act. It's like there's a huge portion of the world, a huge population that is struggling in huge ways, struggling with addiction, struggling with suicide, struggling with all sorts of things, struggling with violence against me and us, right? I can sit here and complain about it, or I can do something about it. And so I see parenting boys peacefully as peace work, because when I, as you said in the intro, work with parents to care for themselves, connect with their boys deeply, set limits lovingly, play wildly, I'm not only bringing peace or helping them, I'm not doing it, but supporting these parents to bring peace to their families, but there's a ripple effect, right? Because if there's that peace in their family, it's going to ripple out to school. It's going to ripple out to their faith-based community, to their neighborhood. And the ripples just keep going. It's going to take a long time to break down the patriarchy, right? Mm-hmm. In the meantime, my boys are going to grow up and they're going to be a part of it by default.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would love for them to use that power for good. I would love for them to have, you know, a hugely high level of emotional intelligence so that they can make loving choices, choices that affect everybody, you know, positively, mm-hmm. that don't oppress others, that don't hurt others. So that's why parenting boys peacefully. I don't think we can just be angry and blame. Mm-hmm. I think we have to give our boys tools to be able to do better.
Yeah.
They do need to do better, but we mm-hmm. can't just say do better and let them go. And then when they don't, you know, stick them in a corner.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You know, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about, you know, a central focus of your work is what you see a lot is aggression, right? Little boy aggression. And is that not the trigger of all triggers, right? I mean, like, depending on where parents came from and what their past is, there's just too much physicality that happens in our patriarchal society and for power and for influence and for manipulation and for fear. And so here these little boys come in, and how do they often express their emotions early on? Is they're physical, and they throw and they hit. And it seems like, man, it's like we start often with this, a big test, because we're not supposed to respond to them in the same way to teach them not to do that.
That's right. And that is really hard. I mean, that's why any journey, including parenting, always has to start with doing our own emotional work. Mm-hmm. And I'm always very careful to say, that doesn't mean we have to reach nirvana or, you know, heal all our old wounds before we can parent effectively. But it does mean that we can't skip that step. We can't just come in and start like holding limits and trying to, you know, fix our kids, so to speak. Like we have to take responsibility, because the truth of the matter is we don't have control over how our kids behave. Like I can't make my kid not call me horrible names. I mean, unless I'm going to, you know, tape his mouth shut, which you don't do.
Right. No.
Right? We don't do that.
We don't do this, people. Yes.
No, we don't do this. So what I do have control over is myself. And what's amazing and phenomenal is how quickly our children's behavior will shift as a result of small shifts that we make in our own behaviors. And sometimes not even our behaviors, but just the energy that we show up with. Or the belief, like the difference between showing up for a kid who with the energy of, I see that sweet boy in there, right? I know there is a sweet boy under this, you know, spitting in my face behavior. I know there's a sweet boy in there. And the difference between showing up with this energy of, I know he's in there and I'm going to reach him. I'm going to connect with him. I'm going to find him. I'm going to dig him out. And the energy of coming to that boy who's spitting in your face with, you know, that's, get out of here. You push him away. And how dare you do that? That's disgusting. And I mean, the energy itself is different. It doesn't mean the behavior is okay in either case. I mean, the behavior needs addressing, but the way we address it makes all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Coming with that different energy is one word for it. I'm thinking like coming at it with a whole different energy, a different mindset. It is game changing, because all of a sudden there's space between us and them, and there's some objectivity between us and them. And I remember just having to learn in our family. And then of course, what I was learning in our family, I was also helping others with in the counseling office, was that one person's meltdown does not have to be a parent or family meltdown. Like it doesn't automatically have to domino. And I think especially because families are so close and are so energetically connected, especially with highly sensitive people, it just doesn't feel like there's a tidal wave that comes over. Your child's having a meltdown, and then there's this whoosh, this wave that comes over you. You get emotionally activated, and then it's just game on. And these are the things that you're trying to pause and create some space. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always saying to clients, A freaked out kid and a freaked out parent is a disaster. It's a disaster. Nope. We all know what it looks like. We've seen it. We've been it, every single one of us. But a flipping out kid and a calm parent is not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is not a problem. That is actually a recipe for healing and for transforming behaviors. Because if your child is showing you a huge upset and you have the wherewithal to stay calm, to not lose sight of his goodness, to share that energy of, you know, we're going to get through this, not me against you, but we're a team. He can heal. And what you will see is a decrease in the intensity of the huge upsets over time, but also in the frequency of them. That's just how it works. So I'm not worried that your kid's flipping out. But if you're flipping out as a result of your kid flipping out, we got to start there.
Right.
Right. And sometimes it's just sharing a story. Like, I just got a message from a client this morning saying, you know, explaining this whole thing that happened yesterday. And what, like, did I do this right? Is this what you're talking about? And one thing she said was that I was so happy that you shared a story about your kids calling you names, because it lifted so much of the shame for me, and it made it so much more possible for me to listen to him last night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he was in the upset calling her names, and that was a real trigger for her. And the trigger seems to be, you know, from shame. And so just by me sharing all the things that I've been called and that my clients have been called, and that doesn't concern me in that heat of the moment, she was able to show up with that different energy and not get hooked on whatever word was being spewed at her in that moment. And they ended up, you know, with a really peaceful, loving end of the evening.
That's a good story. And I'm thinking about the courage it takes. I'm thinking of several client situations that we're experiencing now at the center, and other people I know where in public, the courage that it takes to stay calm while your child, and in this case, your boy, is acting out, temper tantrum, doing things that you would prefer they would not be doing in your own home, let alone in public. And whether it's at a park, in a grocery store, or in a school, generally what happens for the parent that's being calm and trying to deal with the situation is a lot of judgment. Oh, look, they're not dealing with their child. Their child is running the show. Their child gets away with anything. They're the reason for their child's behavior.
Let me tell you another story. When one of my kids was young, I don't remember exactly how it started, but I do remember being in the front of my minivan and a kid like wildly kicking the back of my seat and flailing and screaming. And it was like, okay, I can't drive. This is not safe. I pulled over. We happened to be in kind of a little shishi town. And I pulled over into the parking lot of this shishi gym. I parked like way at the end to try to be away from wherever, you know, it was, people were going to be. So it was kind of a quiet end of the parking lot. And I got out of the car and I opened the side door of the minivan and I kept my kid strapped in. He was strapped into his seat. And I sort of got down to his level and I just listened to him wail about whatever. I don't remember what, but he was spewing all kinds of things and eventually sort of got himself out of the seat and ran down the, or not ran, but walked down the sidewalk. It was an area that he knew. So I wasn't worried about him, but he, you know, went and I knew that he would come back. He was the kind of kid who would come back. So I watched him. I could see him the whole time. And eventually he came back and continued to tantrum. And I listened and he got back in the car and the whole thing. And meanwhile, the whole time I can see that there's a car like a little ways down and there's a woman there. And she's like looking at me. And I'm thinking like all the things you just said, including this woman is going to call Child Protective Services. Like that's how crazy this whole scene looked.
Okay,
he calms down, he gets back in his seat. I'm getting in the car to go, and she walks over and shows up at my door. And I'm like, oh God, like, can I just bury myself somewhere? And she says to me, I just want you to know you're an amazing mom, that he is so lucky that you're his mom.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I like burst into tears, right? I'm like,
yeah,
that's not what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah.
So I find, and that's just one story, but I actually find that that is not generally what's going through people's heads. That is what's going through some people's heads.
Mm-hmm.
But if we are honest, pretty much every single parent has been in a situation similar where your kid is doing some, you know, inane thing and you're embarrassed.
Yeah.
Like, we've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, like, the best remedy to this is practicing as a parent exactly what that other woman did, right? When you see somebody struggling and you know they think you're judging,
mm-hmm.
you can even just say, you know, pass by, you know, I've so been there, or, mm-hmm. you know, I've been there. Is there anything I can do to help, or whatever?
Right.
But, like,
right.
All it takes is one person in that whole environment to say something like that for the parent in that situation to regain their confidence and their ability to stay calm in the face of the craziness. And that's what's important, because, again, like, okay, your kid's flipping out. If you're not, most parents are thinking, like, wow, I could not be that calm in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what they're thinking. Like, I would be all over that kid. I would be flipping out.
Yes. All right. I appreciate that, that perspective, that, that we're parents, when you're doing this, and it's so hard, it's hard at home.
Sure.
It's even harder in public when you have an audience. But I like this idea of thinking that not only are you doing this for your child, but you're also modeling what should be for others as well. Right? There's a ripple effect that can happen that way as well. Like, we can do this without reacting.
And that's how we all learn best, right? That's how our mm-hmm. kids learn best from us, not by what we say, but how we behave.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, as we walk in the world, I mean, we can say, you know, yes, I'm an upstanding citizen, or, you know, I pay my taxes, but if I don't pay my taxes, then
right.
I just don't pay my taxes, right? Or
right.
I could say that I'm kind, but if I am, you know, I talk back or I'm rude to the waiter, then my kid's not seeing me be kind.
Right. Right.
If I tell my kid to be generous, but then I don't tip.
Right.
What are they seeing?
Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about, you said, you know, if you stay calm, you listen, you try to dig out that sweet little boy in there. And over time, and I know I just very quickly summarize, there's way more to it, which we'll talk about, but in this little nutshell, over time the tantrums get less less severe and less frequent. So I'm thinking of the parent saying, wait, so you're telling me, how do I know that if I let my child scream at me and I don't punish them and I don't give them a consequence, that they're just going to think it's okay to yell at women, and then they're going to grow up and yell at their girlfriends, and they're going to yell at their partners, and I'm just part of creating this thing that I don't want.
Are you my client? Yeah. Dan, that is just not how it plays out. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years. This is not how it plays out. It doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
It just mm-hmm. doesn't work that way. I mean, let's just talk about consequences for a second. I hate consequences.
I know you do. That's why I brought them up.
Right. I mean, because I work with the premise, and when you work with me in anything that I do, like, I say, hey, even if you think I'm crazy, you got to adopt this, or it's not going to work. Or let's just pretend, just fake it till mm-hmm. you make it. Right. He's doing the best he can always in every situation. And if that is true, if in that moment he's doing the best that he can, then why am I going to give him a consequence, right? If he had a broken arm and was in a cast and had to write a paper but couldn't use his arm, you wouldn't stand there railing at him about he needs to pick up the pencil and write or type or whatever it is. You'd help him get creative. You know, let's think of some ideas. Do you want to dictate to me and I'll type, or do you want to, you know, I'm sure there's some audio program we can speak into the computer and dictate it. And I mean, we get creative, but because we don't see the emotional challenge that the child is having, we don't think it's real. It's real, just like a broken arm. He can't do better in that moment. And when we choose to believe that, it also has the side effect of helping us show up better. So consequences don't make any sense. And then they just don't, it doesn't play out that way. What happens is, like, we have feelings. We are all human beings. Your boy has feelings. He has every kind of feelings. He feels angry. He feels jealous. He feels sad. He feels, I mean, everything. And we have this lovely thing that we've done where we've put emotions into boxes. These are the good emotions. These are the bad emotions, blah, blah. It's like, well, if you're human, you're going to be feeling all of those emotions at some point in your life. That doesn't mean we act on all of them, but we feel them. And our kids need to learn that they can ride out all these emotions, that there's an end to them. Mm-hmm. They can handle them and they can come out the other end, but they can't do that by themselves. If we try to send them away and they do that by themselves, they tend to develop like repetitive behavior patterns to numb themselves, right? And you see kids, they're like chewing on their shirts and they're soaked down to here, or they're chewing their nails, or like all these things. Because the feelings that are driving the behaviors, like the hurts, the upsets that we may not know, you know, Joey didn't share his snack with me, or so-and-so cut me off in line, or I got my recess taken away and I felt ashamed in front of the class, or you didn't get invited to the birthday party, mm-hmm. whatever. You like my brother better than me. All these things, like the feelings are real. The feelings are real, regardless of whatever our judgment is of them. And in order for him to not have to try to function on top of them with this sort of like perpetual like boiling of emotions, which mm-hmm. in some kids comes out as aggression, we have to create safe spaces for them to come out. And then the behavior diminishes. I don't see that. I mean, good God. Mm-hmm. I mean, just to think of, I mean, I've got a kid, I'll say a personal example. I mean, I got a kid. Wow, what a handful when he was little. Yeah. Talking about aggression that's how I got into this work. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, if I could do this, you could do this. You know, he's one of my kids who's in college now. He is, was hired by the university as the men's engagement educator. Okay. Wants to be a therapist, teaches about consent, gives, you know, trainings to all the student government people, about consent and inclusivity and like all of these things. I mean, he started a club for men at the university all around redefining masculinity.
Awesome.
Okay. Awesome. This is like an extreme. This is not like I expect my other kids to do this. This is also his interest, whatever. But like, if you had seen what was going on, you know, in the supermarket or mm-hmm. in the house or between the brothers or whatever, and I told you that this was going to happen, you would have been saying to me, "What? You know, he's going to end up, you know, hitting his girlfriends or mm-hmm. whatever." Exactly all those things that you said to me. It doesn't play out that way because we're mm-hmm. releasing the tension. We're pulling it up by its roots. We're not putting the lid on it and saying, okay, you got to function on top. You got to mm-hmm. figure this out. I don't care how you feel. You need to behave.
So people can understand the process and, you know, we have this immediate culture, like this thing needs to happen right now. Would you mind saying when, like at his trajectory, when did you start to see this shift into, you know, from before to what he is now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so the personal shift in this case, I would say, well, let's just say the shift from me being scared and worried and mm-hmm. feeling like, okay, people are getting like hurt in the family and I feel out of control, to not, took a few weeks, not very long.
Wow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But the need to use the tools and to help him through was a years long process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the shift to all of this stuff was like, that was a big surprise for me too.
Yeah.
Not the fact that he was very sensitive. And I think this is true about many of our little boys who are struggling with aggression, is that they are highly sensitive. They are very sensitive. And sometimes that's hard for us to know what to do with.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And the word I'm thinking about is regulation. And a lot of these little boys have trouble regulating their big emotions and their big feelings. And it comes out as behavior. And you had talked about earlier, you know, they're doing the best they can, and we need to understand that. So I'm thinking of a few things. One is how we can get into this frame of mind of this is, they're doing the best they can with what they've got where they are now. Mm-hmm. And also holding on to this notion that they don't like being dysregulated and feeling like this, and becoming regulated and then being able ultimately to regulate themselves is a prize in itself. Like, it's a gift in itself that just, it's like, oh man, this feels so much better.
Yeah, it is. I mean, let me just ask you how many adults you know who are good at self-regulating. Okay. Like, yeah. We need to be clear what we're asking of these sweet boys.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I want them to be able to regulate, but they need to co-regulate. They're not going to self-regulate when they're 3, 4, 5, 10. They need our brains, which is why the work starts with us.
Yep.
So the biggest tip that I can give around this is figure out how to get yourself to calm.
Mm-hmm.
And that will create huge change in and of itself.
Yeah.
It's not about self-regulation. Like, that will come in time. That'll also come with brain development.
Yes.
But in the meantime, we need to preserve their self-esteem. We need to preserve their relationships with other people.
Yes.
Siblings, us, friends. Like,
yes.
I think we need to see our role a little bit differently.
Yes.
And also, one other thing is that the expectation, I think a lot of times, you know, with girls and this sort of like this boy-girl thing, and obviously everything I'm saying is relevant to all genders, but I definitely see this pattern that when a girl is struggling, even with aggression or hard behaviors, the tendency for us is to ask what's going on that's causing her to behave this way. Right. And the tendency with our boys is for us to ask what is wrong with him. And right. I think we need to look good and hard at that, because a lot of times we are asking something of them that they are not yet capable of doing, which in effect is just setting them up for failure over and over again, which is just dinging their self-esteem over and over again and making all the behaviors worse. Because when we don't feel good about ourselves, whether we're 10 or 50, we don't act very nice.
No, we don't. And then we seek numbing. Things to numb those
That's
feelings
right.
of shame and other. You're triggering some memories that when it like starts with us with, I'm having this memory. It was a short period of time with one of our, I would say most spirited children. And there was these two situations. I was in alone with this child, and I was so exasperated by the response and the willfulness in these two situations that I was rendered almost like I was exhausted. I was just exhausted. There were two situations that I felt like completely out of control. And instead of trying to gain control, I was just looking, in one case, looking up at the ceiling, another case, looking up at the clouds, inside, outside in these situations, and just breathe. Just was taking breaths because I'm like, oh, I've lost. I have no control here. I don't even know what to do. And I don't have anything left for this. In both of these situations, within probably a 2-month period of time, and I want to say like this was a designed intervention, it was not. But the outcome was amazing and so instructive. In both cases, when I just did nothing and sat with this person for about a minute or two staring, they went, okay, fine, let's go. And I realized all of my usual responses, usual parent responses, and I'm not even being critical. They're actually like regular parent responses, how unhelpful they are in these types of moments. When if we can just sit and observe and witness and breathe, we underestimate our child's ability to make a shift as well if we don't add fuel to the fire.
I love that you're saying this because this is kind of, this is so at the center of the work that I do. Less is more. We come to this work and we feel like, what do I need to do? We feel like they're going to get like an encyclopedia or a guidebook, and less is more. Like, it's really, I mean, my book, Listen, like, really, we just need to listen. And it's, how do we do that in all these different ways? But essentially, what's so cool about little kids is that their bodies, they know how to heal already. They're having a huge tantrum because they have all this like gunky emotional nastiness stuck inside that needs to come out. They're not able to act nice, to cooperate, to be kind to anybody until that gets out. And so they throw themselves on the floor and they have a tantrum. Or, you know, they're not shy to scream and tell us how they feel. You know, I hate you. You know, when I get mad at somebody, I don't scream, I hate you, but I feel it, right? So, but they just let it all out. And and so we don't actually have to teach them how to improve their behaviors. We just have to shift how we show up. And so if we can just be present and non-judgmental and allow this healing process to happen, behaviors change. I mean, it is literally as simple as that. Now, for our healing as adults, well, we've been told for, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years that we need to, you know, keep it together. We need to not be, you know, making a scene, and we need to man up, and we need to all the things. Right. And so we have to relearn that process. And so accessing our feelings becomes this journey. Like, how do we get back to this place where we feel safe enough and there's no shame and we're not embarrassed and all the things that we can actually show how we feel?
Yeah.
But our kids, they know how to do that. Mm-hmm. We just need to step out of the way, just like you did. And maybe it was from a place of like, I'm just exasperated, I don't know what else to do, but it was an amazing discovery. Mm-hmm. And then I think we can actively use that strategy.
Yes.
Like, I will tell parents if they're totally at the end of the rope, they have no idea what else to do, I just go, just drop, just lay on the floor. Just lay down. Middle of the kitchen floor. I don't care. Just lay down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing how our kids respond to that.
Yeah.
We can't control them. We can't control them.
No. Well, and even if we're doing nothing, I'm reflecting on what you're saying in these situations that I shared. I was exasperated and exhausted. But what I wasn't was angry because I was just so exasperated and exhausted. Like, I'm not giving my, I was just beyond, I was like, I got nothing left. But
I understand.
Yes. But so where I'm going with this, because you talk about the highly sensitive children, and this particular one is, our highly sensitive kids can, even if we say nothing, if we're seething, they know it. And we're still doing something if we think we're not doing anything. So the idea, like, just lay down, just sit there. Or with me, it was completely exasperated and I was just kind of just right there. It really does matter how we are feeling. It's not just controlling our behavior. It is centering ourselves and our emotions and our energy to not have that be oozing onto our kids, which they react to, and then we blame them for the behavior, like as if we had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. And that's why that dropping down to the floor works so well, because for one, we're lower than them. So they don't feel that mammalian threat of us towering over. But for two, it's silly because big, powerful adults don't generally lay themselves down on the ground. So it's like a real shift of paradigm. And they're like, what? Like, so it can kind of snap us out and get giggles going. And it's really hard for us to try to be in control and exert our power when we are sort of prone on the ground. It's just hard to take ourselves as seriously and for sure to, you know, to fight.
Yes.
It's not a fight position. Yes.
Okay. We're winding to the parent footprint moment question, but I want to ask you one hopefully quick question in terms of just something to leave our listeners with. So I've heard, you know, key is to look at yourself, to check yourself. Another one is with that is regulate yourself. And then we have co-regulate, you know, like our little kids, little boys, angry boys, when they're having a tantrum, we need to help them regulate. We can't expect them to do it themselves. What What is one thing, particularly for aggression, that you would recommend parents think about?
Oh, it's hard to pick one thing. I mean, we haven't gotten into like setting limits, which is huge, and it's a whole mm-hmm. other topic in and of itself, but it's quite important because really the most important thing is keeping everybody safe.
Right.
But I think what I would like to actually leave people with is this idea of play, like big rough and tumble play, because it's more fun than talking about limits. Yes. And it's something that's easy for parents to go back and really start doing now. And so this is something that you can do like outside of the heat of the moment. Play actually doesn't tend to work very well with aggression when the train's already left the station. But it can often work well if you grab the moment or seize the moment when you first get that pit in your stomach, like, oh God, like this is going to go south. But yeah. It's also something that you can just do in general. So I'm looking on my floor in my office, I guess you can't see me, but I have these indoor snowballs. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but they're these super fun. They like make that yummy crunch sound, like when you squeeze them with your hand, just like a real snowball does. Indoor snowball fights, pillow fights, playing, flipping kids around if they're small enough, tag, jumping on trampolines, just jumping on the couch, jump, whatever, piggyback mm-hmm. rides, just rough and tumble play. And you're going for laughter. Mm-hmm. You're going for laughter. You're not doing this play to overpower your child. You really want to keep yourself in check. It's about having a good time. It's not about you winning. Some of us, like me, can get very competitive and we have to remind ourselves like, okay, I don't need to win. Yes. I'm out here to have a good time. So you're looking for laughter and you're chasing it. Not by tickling, because that's disempowering, but other kinds of play, big play. And you want to get the laughter going, because the truth is, and we talk about this, but what I've seen is most aggression is some kind of fear in disguise. And mm-hmm. laughter is, when we laugh, it's we're releasing light fears. A lot of kids who are acting aggressively often, like, they can't get to tears. Like, they're not crying anymore. And laughter is a good first step. So upping the play, just having more of that fun, good times, I think would be a good place to start.
That's an excellent place to start. Okay, we have to end. From starting to ending, parent footprint moment question. It's been several years since you've tackled this, and I know you're ready. Here we go. Tell us about a time that you became aware of yourself as an individual, as a parent, or even an awareness of your own parents, and that new awareness had a positive impact on your life, your kids, and or those you love.
Oh my goodness.
Flood.
I'm going to have to have you ask me that question again. That was very long and complicated.
Yes. Okay.
Ask me again.
Here we go. Tell us about a time that you became aware of yourself as an individual, as a parent, or even had this awareness of your own parents. And that awareness, that new awareness, had a positive impact on your life, your kids, or those you love.
Okay. So the awareness didn't come from me, but there was a time after, no, it was before the pandemic, but there was a time we had made a huge move across the world and come back to the States, and I fell into a depression, and it was a really, really hard year. And that was the first time I'd ever experienced anything like that in my life. And the last time I ever experienced it, but it was horrible. Mm-hmm. And I was really not functioning well. And there was a moment, I don't even remember what was going on, but I like screamed bloody murder at one of my kids. I can't remember it. I'm not a screamer. Like mm-hmm. one of my kids the other day just asked me, have you ever yelled at us? So I'm not a screamer.
Okay. Yeah.
I screamed. I don't remember what it was about. And my partner came in and he said, you need to get help. And I did. And I got very strategic about getting the support that I needed to mm-hmm. move through. Mm-hmm. And it took 10 months mm-hmm. and I did it.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. It's so important for everyone to hear that regardless of what we do for a living, we are human and we all are vulnerable to and can go through these really difficult periods where we need help outside of ourselves, and how it's often the worst experience which can create the most tremendous growth and healing.
Yes. And I want to share this in particular on this podcast and talking about boys, because I think one of the biggest gifts that we can give our sweet boys is the notion that it is brave to reach out for help. Like, if there's one thing that I love, it's like when one of my boys calls me and says, you know, I think I want to talk to a therapist about this, or I think I need, you know, help with this. And I go, absolutely. Like, let's get you the help you need. Yes. I love that. I don't want them isolating themselves and feeling like they need to figure it out alone.
Yes. So important. Tasha, thank you for coming back on. So good to reconnect and hear about all the great work that you're doing. You are helping to raise this next generation of boys to men to be kind, to be loving, to be able to communicate, to understand their feelings, and then to that ripple effect is just, it's beyond thinkable what will continue to happen with that. Please tell everyone where they can learn more about Parenting Boys Peacefully, your class, and everything else you're doing.
Absolutely. So you can find me at parentingboyspeacefully.com. And I regularly have a course called Out with Aggression, a step-by-step practice to stop your boys' aggressive behaviors and lift your parenting confidence. And I occasionally run a live workshop leading up to that. And Dan is welcome to share whatever links that will lead to that so that you can find me.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Please send this to everyone you know who is in touch with boys, raising them, cultivating their development. This is just the beginning, and it's an important beginning. Thank you for being a part of our community. Thank you for your 5-star reviews. You know the two things I'm going to ask you to do. Be the person. Try to be that person you want your child to become, and ask yourself the guiding question, what footprint do you want to leave? This has been a Peters and Rossi production. Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan is produced by Laura Rossi. Our engineer is Phil Rossi. Theme music is Strummer Man, composed and performed by ProTunes. Artwork is by Garrett Ross. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Parent Footprint Podcast and on Twitter at Dr. Dan Peters. For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.